Welcome to another episode of the Mind Duck Books podcast. This time, finally, I cannot contain my excitement. It's The God Emperor of Dune that came out in 1981, and it has 587 pages, the fourth book in the Dune series. If you haven't read the previous books, or if you haven't listened to our podcast about the previous books, get out of here. I don't know what you're doing here anyway. Mm-hmm. If you're curious, look at episode 50 for the first episode we've done about Dune. Of course, joining me is Paolo. How are you? That's the spice talking.
I realize I made a mistake not drinking my cinnamon tea today.
I had so much tea, I can't. Too hyped for this. So on our first episode, it was just the two of us super fanboying. Second and third, I tried my best to have a different perspective of Christina. Mm-hmm. And today we were planning for Christina to be here. And the official reason is that she has a very bad sore throat. She got a little bit sick yesterday. But I think we all know what the real reason is. I think she doesn't want to be here because of the excessive discussions about worm dicks that's going to happen today. I don't know. That's a good thing that she should be a part of.
I mean, I like her perspective.
Yeah, me too. So we'll get her perspective of worm genitalia later, but yeah, so I have too much to say. I've been waiting to talk about this book. Feels to me like 10 years. I'm so excited to talk about this. This is one of my favorite books. After the first three, I was a little bit disappointed, I guess, because
really?
The first two was like the best setup to a series of books. The third one, like I mentioned in the previous episode, I liked it. But it didn't hold up to my very high expectations.
Okay. Now, for me, I mean, as I said, when I was reading it, the third one was the one I liked the most. So I wasn't disappointed at all.
I was, like, disgruntled, I guess. I wasn't really disappointed. Okay. I was just like, what is this?
I remember this one was, because I knew vaguely, like, just a couple of things about this one was the one I was most excited to read.
Me too. This one has a reputation. This is infamous right. For the book where it gets weird, quote-unquote.
Yeah, I would say this is the one, like, every time I recommend people to read Dune, I always hope they will get to this one just because
yes.
I think it's the funniest to talk about.
So needless to say, I had very high expectations for this, like super overhyped expectations, and it has surpassed those expectations, which I couldn't believe.
I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, I really liked it. I think it's so I guess we'll talk about this more later, but in a way I think this is the best book among the whole six. I think it's the one that made me think the most. Is the one that changed my perspective the most on certain things.
Really?
But at the same time, I think it's the worst written. It's like about 500 pages long, and I would say a good 200 of the 500 are just nonsense. And I don't say nonsense just because it's like random tangents. I usually don't mind those. It's just like it feels like it's really forced. Like like the inner monologue feels like just Frank Herbert wanted to say something and
exactly.
Dropping it there just because he wants to say it, even though it's completely unnecessary. And I usually don't mind a book being long and talking about random stuff, but this one felt really heavy. And sometimes it like I always say that the best description I've ever seen of this was the review on Goodreads, where someone says the whole point of this book is that you ask Leto what color the sky is, and the reply is a three long essay where he never uses the word blue.
Yep.
And very it's accurate. Really interesting, and you appreciate the perspective, but at the same time, it's like, what the fuck are we talking about here?
I thought that's what it would be, and I dare to oppose that there is a plot, and
Sense. Again, my issue is not with the lack of plot, it's more about with kind of like patronizing tone
yes.
that the narration has. Like, do you care at all about any of the other characters other than Leto?
Yes, yes.
I mean, I guess maybe Duncan, but
I love Myla, and Siona also is.
I don't like them at all. Like, they're just like.
And Moneo, I love Moneo.
Moneo is interesting. Moneo is just like, it's the only normal person in this world of crazy people. is just like, why can't you all be normal? Is like the reader is like, well, just calm the fuck down, everyone.
This is one of the most polarizing books. And funny you said Goodreads reviews.
Yeah.
It was really, really amusing to me to read some of the one-star reviews of this book.
Yeah.
So I'd like to read you some very quickly because I think it's amazing how people react to this book. Mm-hmm. And also the reason why I like this so much, this is so much of a polarizing, like I know there are books where mm-hmm. people like really despise them or really love them, but this one this feels like it's one of the most extreme. People like really love this or they really hate this, like really hate this. So, for example, Angel on Goodreads said, "It's gross and weird. I still don't think Herbert has ever spoken to a woman before." Aaron said, "I am lost. This whole spice, prescience, breeding shit, it gets even more out of control, if that's even possible, and I don't get it. I just don't get it. Please make it stop."
I mean, so one of the like criticism that I've seen the most about this book is what you said about like, the perspective of women. Although I would say that that's worse in some of the previous books than in this one. I think it gets much better in the later books, like now book 5 and book 6. It gets much better. In this one, I don't think it's bad. It's just a bit extreme.
Weird. It's different. Extreme, yes.
Another thing is people saying that it's very homophobic, which I think it's the exact opposite.
I think so, exactly.
Like, yeah. I really don't understand why people say this book is homophobic.
Because it touches on the subject.
If anyone, like, any listener has an explanation, please tell me. Because I know the, like, the exact, like, part of the book they're talking about. And I think it's, again, it's the exact opposite. It's Herbert being, like, saying, I don't know. But yeah, we can talk about this later.
Yeah. There's a concept about this that's very, very interesting to me. I don't want to say I love it because it's kind of awful, but we'll talk about it. So a few more reviews. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, Athena Shardbearer, said, "Blah, blah, blah. This whole book was about Leto and how amazing he is." Mm. Not wrong. But I agree.
She's a shard bearer, so you know what that means.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I picked this one. Somebody who calls himself or themselves Edge of a Bubble. So they said, "I don't accept this monstrosity made of ramblings of an old fart as a Dune book. About 1,870 pages of boring drivel that smothers you in its contemptuous arrogance. It should have been 50 pages, not 1,830 pages, less of a torture."
I'm pretty sure it's not 1,800 pages, but...
it's not. It's 500 something. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not true, but, like, you can say that about a lot of books, so it's fine.
Somebody called Hafsa said, "If you feel like you had a bad day, just read a book that has 500 pages written in the perspective of a fucking worm. No one is suffering more than me right now."
Okay.
So many of these reviews. It's so funny. Yeah. So there's one more. "God Emperor of Dune is pure and complete insanity." Oh, but it's not just insanity, not normal insanity. Oh, no, it's a special sort of insanity. It's a sort of insanity that happens when you give crazy way too much money, power and influence, and creative license. I like to call this kind of crazy George Lucas syndrome.
Yeah, I don't really agree. Like,
yeah, I absolutely disagree.
I mean, Dune was successful, but well.
Yeah, so it's just amusing to me. I think, like you said, I wish more people read this.
Yeah, to give a comparison, just in terms of my feelings, this is what the feeling that I get when people get interested in Dune and might possibly read Dune, when I think I wish they get to this book, is the same as people who might read JoJo and they might get to part 7 of JoJo. I'm like, you should read JoJo just so that you can get to part 7 and we can discuss about part 7.
Okay.
This is kind of the same. So you should read JoJo.
I don't know what that's about at all, but I'll read that one day. I'll read Berserk too, but I don't think we should switch to comic books just yet.
JoJo is not a comic book.
Okay. Okay. So I wanted to say, have you read anything from Heinlein?
No, I don't think so, no.
So check out episode 24 about Starship Troopers, where I said that Heinlein is an angry uncle that is ranting somewhere at a party, being drunk, and everybody hates mm-hmm. him. But everybody knows that he's saying the truth somehow. And this reminded me of that. Yeah. It's like Frank Herbert really wanted to tell everybody they're super wrong, and he needed to find some kind of way to do that. In the first book, he said, oh, let's make an adventure, and let's lead people along and get them on this exciting adventure. And then you tell them they're super wrong, and it's all bad. And then in the next book, they're like, oh, so it's all bad, so let me make you depressed even more. And in the fourth book, he was like, yeah, so if you're still here, you might as well just listen to me tell you directly. Yeah. So I'm just going to make myself a verb god, and I'm going to spew the philosophy in your face for 500
this
pages.
This is literally like himself in the story as Leto talking. Like most of the book, that's what it is. I want to say one more thing, which is, I think, one of the reasons why this book is hard to read and kind of polarizing. Because we grew up with the visual narration of movies, and we are so used to watching movies, things are described in a way that are seen in movies. Like, it's very easy to visualize not just the action, but a lot of the scenes and a lot of the flow in the way that it will flow in a movie. You can say the same for example, Brandon Sanderson. This, like, if you want to have a criticism of how he writes, is that it's extremely cinematographic in a way that sometimes is excessive.
Oh, I didn't think about it. That's true. That's kind of the opposite of
like
this.
Frank Herbert, it's way less than that. That's also why I think it was so hard to put the first few Dune books into movies. For this fourth book, to me, it reminds me a lot of V for Vendetta, in the sense that it doesn't really work if you turn it into a movie, but it makes so much sense if you turn it into a theater. Like, if you imagine this book into a theater piece, where like the setting is extremely simple and there are only like three or four cardboard things in the background, very few locations, very few characters, a ton of monologue, it makes so much more sense.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
And if you approach it
with
that mindset,
I would love this as a theater play.
I think it's much, much more enjoyable than if you approach it with the mind we usually approach books, which is, again, more of a visual narration in the style of a movie. I don't know if they make sense only like in my brain, but like that's how I felt.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah, that completely makes sense. So I want to ask you, did this feel like a new genre? Because it did to me. Like, what is the genre of this book?
I mean, I guess it's still sci-fi.
It felt to me like a comedy.
A comedy.
I was laughing so much at this. Like, did you laugh?
I mean, I laughed at certain things. I'm not sure that was the intent of Frank Herbert.
It made me like genuinely like tickle, like in a way I've never experienced.
I think the absurdity is kind of comedic. I would say so.
So some parts are genuinely so funny to me, and I would describe this as like a horror sci-fi comedy with philosophical, like, I guess it's like a philosophical theater play that's a sci-fi horror comedy. Which
I wouldn't put any horror. Where's the horror?
There is horror. Like, there is graphical gore and stuff that goes bad, really badly, and people get burned to life and then laughed at. Like, what the hell? Like, what's that about this?
Yeah.
I felt almost like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, if it was dark, adult, and like somehow with porn. I don't know. What the hell?
I mean, it makes sense.
It's so strange. It and I love it when it's strange and weird and it still makes sense.
This one is definitely the weirdest one. As weird as it gets in the fifth and sixth, I think this is the weirdest one in the most creative way. Like, fifth and sixth is weird in just like, I can't believe he's actually putting these things into the story in a good and in a bad way. But it's not, okay, but it's not that absurd, and it's not that like unthinkable.
It's not so out there. Yeah.
Some of the stuff in this one is just like, what is happening?
Exactly. And I felt like all of it was somehow justified and made sense. We can talk about the details later. But that's why I love this so much. It is so out there, so weird, so creative, so different, so bonkers.
It's like JoJo.
And it all makes sense.
Yeah.
It like all somehow came together. And that's also what I said in our episode 50. I love the series for the sci-fi being in the concepts and the thinking. So how people think is the main meat of the imagination. Yeah. Like, it's not the technology. The main part is like, how would people's thinking and thought processes change in the future based on what could happen? And that's the most interesting, and that's why I love this. So that's what I meant to say.
I agree.
And for me, this was somehow the most emotionally enjoyable thing I've read in a long time. It was so funny. It was so interesting. So many things made me think. Mm. And there was still this like weird pacing that I somehow really enjoyed. And I loved the ending so much. We'll talk about the climax. Yeah. Like we've already talked about it with Christina. I cut it out. So I'll put it at the end of this episode. Because
I think for me, it is the one that changed my perspectives on certain things the most. Especially when it comes to religion and control. For me, it was very, very impactful.
Yeah. I said about book two that it's got my all-time favorite villain. So this book has a god character in any story ever. This is the best I could have imagined. So before we start talking about the story and all this stuff, do you recommend this book?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think people should read Dune just to read this book.
You're absolutely right that it comes in like in twos. You always say if you read first, you have to read second. If you read third, you have to read fourth. And this is also why I was putting reading off the next few books, because this was like really, really satisfying ending for me. And I don't think it can get better. Like yeah, I cannot imagine 5 and 6 to be better.
I don't think they are. I think they're pretty well known that 5 and 6 are one or more steps below the previous four. They're still good books, okay. I think. It's just like they're normal sci-fi books.
This was the ending I wished for, and it did everything I wanted.
Okay.
I was very satisfied on all fronts. Yeah. So if you want to read this, if you've read book 1, 2, 3, and you're here to decide if you're reading book 4, so please get out, read the book, don't listen.
I mean, I guess you can listen, like the plot is not that important.
I guess. Yeah, so of course we recommend this. This is probably the cherry on top why the Dune series is what it is. So let's jump into the plot. I have lots and lots to talk about. I have made so many notes. I almost went crazy. I reread parts of it. I'd like to give a shout out to jakurutu.com, which is an old-timey forum where somebody with a username called Freakzilla recaps all the chapters by chapter with very concise paragraphs. So if you want to like find something or look at it, it's very well organized. So 5 seconds recap of the first three books before we get into part four. So Paul goes to Dune. And
he becomes the the emperor and also like the head of the religion, and
everybody dies.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah, the house Atreides, his house, his family, everybody's dead basically. Book two, his wife dies, his eyes are burnt out. He's just melted. Completely effed up. Yeah, his eyes melted in his skull. Oh my goodness. And then book three, he's even more depressed. He has 2 children. His sister is possessed by Baron Harkonnen, jumps out of a window to kill herself. He becomes a worm, runs like a superhero in the desert at the speed of worm. Oh my God, everybody's depressed. So jump 3,500 years in the future and book four.
Nice.
The most insane premise to the story.
Yeah.
So basically, Leto already said it at the end of the third book. He said he'll be the emperor for thousands of years, and we kind of expected him to become a worm. So he became a worm, and on purpose, he made himself a tyrant.
Okay, 1 second. When you say like he became a worm, like he became kind of like the, how can I say, like the very strange version of a worm. Like he's not nearly as big as a worm.
I laugh a lot.
And he still has like his arms and legs, and like his legs are just like dangling.
I have lots of notes about this. So they go very much into the physical description of the worm body, anatomy and everything. And I love that. I was sure it wouldn't be there because it's too weird. And I was sure it would be just like, oh, he's a worm. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about it. Let's forget about it.
But they talk about what it looks like very specifically. And I love that. So like you said, the appendages, like atrophied arms and legs are just kind of down at the worm's body, kind of flippers now.
Yeah, they're just like there and just dangling. Like his arms, I think he can still use his arms.
A little bit. And they're not near his head, they're like down to the body. So all the depictions where his like tiny arms are on top, that's not what the book
says. Yeah, exactly. I think some of the descriptions, like if you read the description, if you see like most of the pictures, it's very different.
Yeah.
Like his legs are just coming out of a part of his body, and same with his arms, and they're just there.
So I wrote down all the notes. He's 7 meters long, and his face is at the height of a man. So he's kind of like flying flat, and then he's just lifted a little bit, standing up all the way. He's 2 meters in diameter, and he's ripped most of the way through his body. And at the end, on the front, he's got a face, and the face can be covered with kind of a like a lid or like an eyelid. He can like blink his face, which is super creepy. So we didn't say that just in case people forgot. So in the third book, he covered his skin with sand trout and it like grafted onto himself. And then throughout 3,000 years, he became more and more and more of a worm, and he lost his humanity, and he becomes more and more unlike a person. And even his organs, like internal organs, started changing. At one point, they mentioned that his heart is like multiple hearts.
And like his brain is not where his head is anymore. So even if they crush his head, he wouldn't die.
So even if you cut his head off, it would be whatever.
And also, he can make spice. Like he can poop spice like a real worm, and he's just feeding on his own poop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very much. And the most hilarious thing about this, I was laughing so much. Every time somebody talks to him, there's so many scenes where he tries to meet people and not scare them. And sometimes he has like different tricks, and sometimes he's like, oh, let's switch off the lights.
Yeah.
And I'll just like talk to them. And then I'll like slowly like increase the light. And then I'll be like, oh, so just please don't freak out. Yeah. I'm a worm, but it's okay. I'm a friendly worm. And then they like show the lights, and he's like, it's a worm. So funny.
Yeah, like he does all of these things. It's
and the funniest thing is every single time somebody comes in, I think the first time is Duncan, and Duncan looks at him and he keeps like looking like under his front, and he's like, so brah, like brah, you have to tell me, like brah, you got a dick in there? And he's like, no, I don't have a dick. And then there's Hvi Nori, and Hvi also is like, so like in case we get married, like you got a dick? And he's like, no. And then later I lost it when what's his name? Malky. Malky comes back to meet Lito, and during the conversation he's like, so by the way, Lito, do you get a dick? And Lito was like, god damn it! Why does everybody keep asking me about my dick?
Like the question everyone would want to ask.
At one point he says, oh, I wish I could have made an appendage that would look as obscene as possible and like put it in front of my body and hide it with a cloth, and when people ask, I would just show them, like to shock them. Do you remember that? He has like all these thoughts, and I was like, I was losing it. I was like, of course that's what a bored god would do. He would make like an artificial obscene dick to pretend he's got a dick and shock people with it for fun. So that's what happens. So that's what I meant by the comedy. This is like so absurd.
No, that's true. Like he has a lot of, again, I'm not sure how intentional this was, but he has a lot of, he does and says a lot of things that are like, wow, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I couldn't. Okay, so the setting, so Lito is just Lito, a god, a worm. He's 5 tons, I wrote down, 5 tons he weighs. And yeah, so the setting is that Arrakis is now called Rakis, I think.
No, sorry, wait. Rakis is called in the fifth book, or is it already called
I'm not
Rakis?
Sure. I think already it's
okay,
now
well,
already.
Sorry.
I think anyway. In the fifth book they start changing like Arrakeen is now Keen, and Caladan is now Dan, and stuff like that. But this one, I think, is just Arrakis, and it's Rakis. And it's a completely like a green oasis of a planet. Everything's peachy, and there's only one desert left. It's called the Sarir, and that's a personal space only for Lito. Nobody can get there except him.
Yeah. Well, and he... this is one of the things that I said. It's like unintentional. He built a tower in the middle of the desert, which is... I forgot how tall it is, but it's like insanely tall. It's like, it's completely nonsensical. It's super tall and it's super narrow. It's basically this gigantic antenna.
I think, exactly. And I think it was exactly on purpose, because what he's going to do, he's going to have some fun, right? So when he goes on his vacation in the desert to roll around and poop in the sand, he's like, oh, let me swirl around this tower. And I imagine his body exactly fitting in the staircase, and he's like swirling around on the top.
No, because like he has his throne, which is like this flying platform. So he can go from the ground floor to the top floor just using this sort of elevator. But when he calls people to, they have to take those steps.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
They have to walk for like 6 hours.
And Nyla goes to meet him up the stairs, and he's so impressed that she's not so tired. And it's like 3 chapters of her just walking up the stairs.
Yeah. It takes her forever just to climb
the
stairs.
He never says it, but I imagine when he wants a workout, he just slithers up the stairs himself just to work out.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's why he built it. It's like a gym in the desert.
Yeah.
So the Fremen, I don't know, the Museum Fremen, which is so sad and kind of...
Yeah, that's one of the... You know, when people read the first book and it's like, oh, wow, the Fremen, now they got their power, they're saved, and Paul saved them. And then you see this, you see the Museum Fremen, and it's like, wow, this, wow.
Every book is worse. Like in the second book, it was kind of bad. Third book, very bad. And now it's like just insult to injury. And they have plastic Kris knives and they do like fake rituals with them. They don't even remember how to do them anymore. Yeah, it's messed up. So other stuff that happens is that everything is basically medieval times now.
No, I mean, people say that. I don't think it's medieval times. It's more like there, he has depressed technology. So like people know technology.
Okay, so very limited, enforced, like in this,
like,
simple
they
life.
Know things. It's just that, yeah, it's just that they can't travel across the universe because the like all the worms have died, and so the amount of spice is extremely limited, and Leto has the complete monopoly over how much spice he's giving. So people are aware that, you know, there is space and they can travel to different planets, and they're aware that technology exists. It's just that their access to technology is extremely limited. So it's kind of like futuristic people forced to live in a like medieval lifestyle, but it's not medieval-like people. Like, they know technology, they are aware of things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more like they're forced into the condition.
So we talked about the Golden Path, and this is the Golden Path. Basically, Leto is trying to make humanity not disappear and like better themselves and prepare themselves for the future. Basically, the idea is that he will be such a tyrant and he will drown people in peace so hard that they will finally understand that the peace they wish for doesn't make any sense. And also, he will harden people, like he will, through adversity, he will make people tougher, because people grew too soft, basically.
They're soft with water.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly no joke. And he's trying to be like an apex predator. And he keeps talking about these analogies about being a predator and killing the prey. And when the prey has a predator, then they adapt and they become stronger and they learn new things and they adapt. Yeah. If they don't have any adversity or any danger in their life, they just kind of fizzle out and become soft with water. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what he's been doing. He's already for 3,500 years been just pushing people into submission and trying to execute his vision for the Golden Path to prepare humanity to transform into something better. And his plan is ultimately to die and let people just be free. But before they can be free, they have to go through this trial.
Yeah, and ask him 1,000 times if he can copulate.
So, Christina mentioned in our previous episode about the Children of Dune, would it be boring to be a god? How boring would that be? So, very much.
Yeah, very much. Okay, I think we need to start talking about some of the weird things that, like, even just at the beginning up here. So first, so as you said, now Dune is kind of like this lush planet with forests and rivers. And he named things after the characters and the other things in the first three books, right?
Yes.
So one of the rivers is called Duncan Hyder, but he keeps using Golas of Duncan Idaho as kind of like servants and like just to entertain him.
So yeah, it's insane.
The Duncan Idaho, a river called after them.
So Duncan Idaho is like poor Duncan.
Yeah. Just can't die.
Just can't die, and he keeps being resurrected and resurrected, and it's so funny at points. Yeah. But I wanted to say, this is also why I think this book is so weird and logically makes sense in such an original way, because many sci-fi stories do this trope where you appear in the future, and there is the character out of water, and he's like shocked about the future, and you know, they see the new technology, and they see the new manners, and new fashion, and new people, and he's like kind of scared of it, blah, 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 and then he kind of adapts. This takes it to such a new level that I can't even fathom.
Yeah, yeah.
This is so insane. Like, this actually felt like it. Like, all the other stories I just mentioned, it always feels like kind of relatable. Like he goes to the future and there are flying cars, and you're like, okay. Like in the Three Body Problem trilogy, we talked about how they skip forward and there is like the future of the city, and it felt like okay, like yeah, that's what people usually imagine, and the characters are kind of shocked about it, but then it kind of like is brushed off and nobody cares anymore.
Yeah,
there's some new technology, whatever. In this book, it's so gruesomely, shockingly awful to be in the future for this character that it actually feels like what it would be to jump 3,000 years in the future. And it's so well pointed, like depicted. I couldn't feel like for Duncan, like fucking Duncan. It's so bad.
Yeah.
So Duncan is cloned and cloned and cloned and cloned. And the ultimate reason is that I guess Leto is just kind of bored. And he's like, oh, the Bene Gesserit has a breeding program. I'll have a breeding program. It's going to be a better breeding program. And I'm going to breed everybody with Duncan.
Oh, no, he's not breeding everyone. Not everybody, but like, he keeps breeding the Atreides line, like the descendants of Ganyma. But that was like to build Siona. So that was part of the Golden Path.
It's been 3,000 years. I bet he's just for fun bred everybody all over the place.
Yeah, Duncan, like he just says like he's happy when Duncan makes babies.
Yes.
She's like, what? Why does it have to be like this? Maybe we should talk about the story. We're just talking about the weird stuff.
Yeah, that's great. That's why we're here.
So yeah, at the beginning of the story, there's Siona and friends who all die a horrible death are trying to enter the fortress.
I meant to say, first page of this book, you open this.
Yeah.
And I meant to read a sentence. Yeah, so you open chapter one and you read, and there's like the prefaces of the chapters, as usual. Mm-hmm. And the first one says, this morning I was born in a yurt at the edge of a horse plain in a land of a planet which no longer exists. And tomorrow I will be born someone else in another place I will not have yet chosen. This morning, this life. I read that and I was, this is gonna be some shit, like this book, like the first line, what the hell is this talking about? So basically Leto can remember everything and he can just imagine stuff and like go back into the memories, and he just imagines he's being bored somewhere. Oh my god. Okay, so then cut to Siona and her team being hunted down, not by wolves, not by tigers, but by wolves.
No wolves.
Wolves this time. Immediately I was laughing again. I was like, fucking wolves again. So what are D-wolves? They never describe them. It's like some kind of cybernetic wolf.
I don't know. They're dick wolves. I don't know.
So they have a team, I think it's like 10 people with Siona, and then trying to steal some secret journals.
Siona Atreides.
Leto has some system of Ixion technology that telepathically writes down everything he thinks and says.
Yeah.
And basically everybody's trying to get Leto and finally kill him because everybody hates him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to steal some of it and find his weakness. So they stole like two books or two volumes of something and they're running away. Everybody dies except Siona. And Siona is like, dare you, Leto! I'm gonna get you one day. And that's the beginning.
So
cut to Duncan being resurrected again.
There is a previous Duncan trying to kill Leto.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Leto has to crush him with his ass.
It was so funny again because he was like, Leto's like super bored. And he's like, yeah, these Duncans.
He's going to try to kill me again. Okay, sure.
And then he like falls asleep for a bit or something. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So funny.
I forgot, but yeah. And then like there was his majordomo, like Siona's father.
Moneo.
Moneo is like, you know he's about to kill you. Like he wants to try to kill you. Like, can't we do something? It's like, yeah. Moneo is like, is the only person with a brain, with a normal brain in this whole book, asking him to do the right thing.
So Duncan comes up to Leto and he's like hiding a lace gun.
Yeah.
And Leto's like, oh, it's happening again. These Duncans always freak out and I'm going to kill them and resurrect them again. And he keeps thinking to himself, and Duncan has like a monologue about how evil Leto is. And he's like, whatever. And I'm not sure if it's the first time, but one of those times, he literally falls asleep for a second.
No, but the best part is, before the Duncan even comes, because he calls him the Duncan,
yes.
Amazing, he asks Moneo to order another Duncan. Contact that Lilaxu, we're going to need like another Duncan soon. Like, okay.
So I would like to give another award. I gave the biggest BMF award to Cytale. So I'd like to give the award of the Overlord of Arrogance to Leto, the Worm God.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I'll give him points for it. So this is like point Like, what are they? I don't know how many, but point for crushing Duncan with his butt because he was like falling asleep. And then Duncan was like, oh, I'm going to shoot you. And Nito was like, oh, okay. So I'm going to shout at you like with the voice of Paul just to scare you. And then when you like freeze to death, then I'm going to just like plop my body on you and crush you to death. Next Duncan. And then Moneo has to come in and wipe the blood off the walls. And it's like, not again. Oh my God. I told him just a minute ago. I told him he should have been careful, and now he's splattered on the walls.
I mean, this focus is just insane.
And then resurrect next Duncan. I don't know if this is happening next, but just to jump, just to finish my thought about the like the dystopian future. Mm-hmm. So the next Duncan resurrects, and he got like some kind of memories, but he's introduced to this world. And it's so jarring to him.
So one thing that we should mention is that the thing that makes this Duncan different is that unknown to Leto, this Duncan has not only the memories of Duncan Idaho, but also the memory of Tufir after he got resurrected in the second book. Because usually most of them, they were Golas, so they remember dying to let Paul escape. So dying against the Sardaukar in the desert in the first book. But this one also actually remembers everything that happened in the second book and then in the third book until it got killed by Stilgar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is never like really touched upon, but maybe this is also what makes him different. Am I remembering this correctly, or am I confusing it with the Duncan?
Yeah, they don't
in the
go into
book?
Depth of it, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, anyway.
I don't think it's very elaborated on, but I remember something like that.
Maybe I'm confusing it with the fifth book. I don't know. There are too many Duncan Idahos. Definitely. And there's also a river Duncan.
I told Pablo, I opened the fifth book, and they were like, first page, they were like, oh, is this the 12th Duncan? I was like, damn it! Stop it with the Duncans!
But that's like 18-year-old Duncan, so I think it's fine.
Okay. Whatever. And so Duncan wakes up again, resurrected, like different Duncan. Mm. And he's like, oh, what is this new world? Where am I? Oh, there's like an army of muscular women, and they all want to bathe me?
The fish speakers. Yeah. This is... Okay, I think we should talk about this. Like, Duncan has always been like this alpha male, and also like in the fifth and sixth book, like he's this super alpha male that is like the ultimate hunky boy.
Yeah, super hunky boy.
Yeah, and in this book he wants to be the hunky boy, but then there are all these women who are
hunkier,
kind of like hunky, more, yeah, like more hunky boys than him, and he's kind of shocked. He's like, what am I doing? What is happening?
Death by snoo snoo immediately, and he like takes a bath with them. And then he talks to Moneo and Leto, and he learns about all this stuff happening in the background. He learns that Leto is a worm, and he learns that Leto has been breeding his copies of himself with women. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I shouldn't have had sex with them in the bath? What? Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
and Moneo is like, yeah, that's right, that's how he gets you, because he wants you to have sex with as many fish speakers as he can, because then he can breed more Duncan babies. And Duncan's like, what the fuck is this place?
Yeah.
And then he goes back to like meet Leto again. I don't know if it's this Duncan or some other Duncan. And he's like super upset, like after some time, some time passes, and he hides a bomb, and he tries to explode himself, like kill himself in front of Leto to kill Leto. Yeah. And Leto again like falls asleep in the middle of it. Like, what the hell? So yeah, that happens just on repeat. Duncans are resurrected and killed again.
And doesn't want to be his stud.
So let's talk about the fish speakers. This is one of the most controversial things, I think.
Okay, so Leto has built like this army, all-female army, to kind of control the galaxy. And they're called fish speakers, and the reason is so dumb. It's because like the very first priests on Earth were called like fish speakers, because like ancient people believed that the source of life and like divinity or whatever was in the water.
I kind of get it, like I don't mind it.
I mean, sure, but I don't know, it seems like you just wanted to give them like a wacky name, and it's like, yeah, fish speakers, let's find a reason to call them fish speakers.
It sounds religious, so it works.
Sure. Anyway, and it's all female because... I understand this is controversial.
I genuinely think this reason has sort of
I think this is good. I think this is something that it's actually good. Like, especially given the age this was written in. So he says that it should be an all-female military force, because he's dominating everything. And he says that if there's no external enemy, military will turn against its own people.
Hmm.
Which is Absolutely true. It's something that, you know, again, if you see, like Leto says, like it's seen throughout history, completely true. And he says that if you make a military that's only men or only women, it doesn't matter, they will eventually turn towards homosexuality, which is a very kind of like touchy topic. But in a way, it's kind of true in the sense that if you put a bunch of men that they have to spend this whole time together and they form like these really strong bonds, because again, like homosexuality and heterosexuality, like the line is not as distinct as people like it to believe. It is kind of true. But then he says that they would accumulate all of these, men would accumulate all of this unexpressed rage and fury and like need for violence, and it would be hard to control. But instead, for women, that wouldn't happen because they have different impulses and so on. Now, I'm not a psychologist. I don't want to comment on whether this is like realistic. It's not. Like, I don't care. Like, we're talking about a worm who has lived for 3,500 years. This is, I think, besides the point. But I think it's pretty interesting as a concept, and the reason why he decided to make this military force which is entirely female, and the way it evolves, and also the fact that they are, how can I put it, extremely lusty. As Christina would say, they are horny.
Yes, very much.
They want children with Duncan.
I absolutely agree with this, and I think it's very true. I'll let you finish.
No, to get to the point where I was mentioning before, which is the most controversial part, which is when Duncan finds out that... So he's going through the barracks and he sees some of them like kissing each other. And he's kind of disgusted by this. I'm like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, are women who like other women? Are they lesbians? Like, this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And Moneo immediately kicks his ass and he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And he gives like this whole spiel about this thing about, you know, female forces. And I think like people say, okay, wow, Duncan is kind of like the hero and is portrayed as the hero and like the best hunky boy in all the books. So if he's saying that, like Frank Herbert is saying that Duncan's thinking is correct, but I completely disagree. I think it's the complete opposite. It's just showing that Duncan is, how can I put it, is behind, like culturally, like he has never
evolved. The point. Yes.
And if you notice, like, Duncan does a lot of stupid shit in this book.
Yes, Duncan is a dumbass in this book.
Trying to kill Leto. He has sex with Hui, which we'll talk about later. And Moneo never does anything to him other than scolding him.
Because they're trying to protect him. He is a stud that's from, or it's a remnant from the past, and it's very much behind times. And at one point, they even call him an old model.
Yeah.
They have a fight with Moneo. And Moneo is 118 years old. And Duncan is like a young... like very muscular
hunky boy,
spry man, hunky boy, and he tries to punch him and Moneo overpowers him completely, and Duncan is super scared and he's like, what? And Moneo just gives him the sickest burn and he says, oh, we have advanced our genes and evolution so much beyond what you used to be at your time, so you're just an old model, bitch. Duncan was like, oh my god, what is this? So anyway, the fish speakers I could talk about like an hour. I try to sum it up very shortly, but this is why I love Dune and especially this book, because they always do this, and I would say this is similar to like solving like a puzzle and you keep finding new ways to look at it, and it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Like, I love computer games. If you have a good puzzle game, you solve a certain mechanic and then they come up with a new mechanic that kind of opens your perspective, and then they do it like more and more and more, and that's how you know it's like a good, they really explore it in depth. And that's what I felt like they really did with the fish speakers. So the homosexuality level is only the first like tidbit about it.
Yeah And they're also like, essentially they are kind of preachers too. They are kind of like warrior priestess, like the they have the ceremony where Leto joins them,
that's
which
scary.
Is very much like a religious ceremony.
It's called Sayanok or something.
Yeah.
Completely freaks Duncan out.
Yeah.
Duncan's just the biggest dumbass, but whatever.
Half of the book is just Duncan. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, that's. I think it's very much needed in this story. It's like the reader, basically. So the first point is that if the army was only men, they would probably turn into being homosexuals, whatever. The next point is, if you have a man, aggressive, violent army that conquers an area, what happens usually? Like, What usually happens is that they just pillage and rape everybody. Like, historically, even if not most of them, it always somehow happens and it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then there is peace. And who are the people living in the peace? It's the children of the people who were raped, which is awful.
Yeah.
And what kind of people are they? Like, you know, it's like a vicious cycle of violence. Like, they conquer the place. They rape the women. The women have children they didn't want, and the children are completely messed up because that's where they came from. They didn't have a father, then they grow up to be horrible, and then they rape the next village. And it's like, what is happening? So he's trying to put a stop to this by, if, I don't know if he called this in the book, and I'm sure you're already canceled on this podcast, so whatever I'm going to say. He's trying to do it. He's trying to create something like a reverse rape scenario, which sounds completely insane.
I don't remember this, but yeah. It is kind of like, he's creating like kind of like a femdom society, which then, like, if you read like book 5 and 6, it makes complete sense. Because in book 5 and 6, like, the universe is completely dominated by this group of women.
So he's using sex and, like, I don't want to say power of women, but like womanhood, I guess, to subdue, dominate the men. And he explains that the reason the female army is more reasonable, quote unquote, or the people, like the women, are less violent, is that they have clear stages in their life that force them to grow up and become more, like, reasonable adults.
Mm-hmm.
So if a woman is growing up, they get their period, they grow up, they have a child, they become a mother. There's like clear biological stages in their life
mm-hmm.
that force them to consider that they got older and they have to change how they live. Meanwhile, the men are teenage idiots the whole life. And there is nothing changing their life. Like, you know, they get a boner and that's it. And then the biology of their body is the same, unless something happens in their life that, like, quote-unquote, tests them. People love testing people in the Dune books. They don't ever change and kind of grow up. Like, if there isn't any adversity or any harsh experience or anything that really forces them to be, like, tested, they don't really grow up. And they become violent, aggressive bastards.
Yeah.
So what he's trying to do is make the women forcefully have sex with the stupid men, so that they create a family and they changes the man's life. They puts this event in their life, like they have a child now, to grow up and become non-violent. Like, they change their priority to be a protector of the family and not a pillager and rapist. So by doing that, he's trying to make the population and society better, which is a very interesting, like, warfare idea.
Yeah, I think all of this is, yeah. It's a very, very interesting concept. He's trying to design society in all sorts of ways, and this is one way. I think you can see what you're saying, like, very clearly in two aspects of the book. And one is the fact that he gets defeated by Hui.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, again, in the book, is several times he's portrayed as, in a way, kind of like as this horny teenager. Like, like sometimes, yes. Sometimes he's... What he thinks and what he says is very childish. He's like, oh yeah, everyone thinks they can make fun of me because I can't have sex, but they don't know that in my memories I have all the things. And it's like, you're just like, you know, the guy who says, oh yeah, I don't have a girlfriend, but who cares, I can, like, I have porn. It makes no sense.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Just being like a nerd 13-year-old. And the fact that in the end he has no emotional protection from Hui, and in a way it's shown that he still has no emotional protection against Ganima. Like, he still keeps things from Ganima and he still keeps her remains in the palace. It kind of shows that, yeah, he never grew, like, just how you said, like, for most men, like, he also didn't have that. And so, like, he became a worm when he was 9, and in many ways his more animal brain never grew up from there. Just pretty interesting.
I wrote down, what would it actually be to be a god and also become a god at the age of 9? At the age of 9, and I wrote, step 1, constantly tell everybody that I'm better and they're wrong. Step 2, surround myself with an army of horny, attractive women. Step 3, have a religious seance that's regular, where they praise, worship me, and at the end of the seance, everybody has to touch me. Step 4, have a best friend, constantly drive him to insanity, and tell him how wrong he also is, even though he's clearly right, and he's got more experience and wisdom than me. This is like so true. So yes, this theme is throughout the whole book. Yeah. So let's get back to so Duncans are resurrected. Yeah. There is the fish army, fish speaker army, and basically most of the book Leto is just talking to people and telling them their role.
Yeah, there are all of these ceremonies. Like there is, like he's going to the city because he's going to the festival city. I forgot what it's called.
Yeah. So there's a festival, and on the way I have to mention because it's more points of overlords of arrogance, and it was very funny to me. So they go to this city, he's riding on his cart, and they get like ambushed by face dancers. And the face dancers are looking like Duncan.
Yeah.
And they are wearing Duncan's clothes. Fight breaks out and everybody's killing each other. And what does Duncan do?
He gets naked.
He strips himself completely naked.
I had forgotten about this until you said it. And, I'm like
and he started murdering people left and right, bathed in blood. And Leto is like riding around on his cart, just knocking idiots over, like running them over his cart, like laughing at it. And then he stops and he looks at Duncan, like naked in blood, and he's like, ha, 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 Duncan, that's him, right?
That's my boy, Duncan. Look at him all naked.
What else could have he done? Of course he's clever like that. Of course he would have gotten naked, because that's how easily you can solve this issue of not knowing which Duncan is my Duncan. And he's like,
good job,
Duncan.
Yay, that's why. I keep resurrecting you.
That's so funny.
You do this shit.
This is why I meant this book is like a new genre to me, because it's gruesome, awful, kind of true, and it's funny, and it shouldn't be funny. Yeah. We shouldn't be laughing at this. Like, it's awful. But people are dying, and we're just laughing at it. Yeah. So I guess we're kind of like Leto. Anyway, he gets to the ceremony. He tells everybody they're wrong.
That's the part of the book where, that's why I said, like, the whole central part of the book when he is in the city. And, like, it's interesting in a way because it's showing all of the different factions kind of being, like, they were so powerful in the first few books, and now they're, like, reduced to nothing. Like, you mentioned the Fremen being, like,
they dismantled
Fremen.
All the houses.
Yeah, the
and
Bene
all the
Gesserit affections. Being, like, now we don't have enough spice to make Reverend Mothers. We can barely do anything. And then he has removed all Mentats. So one of the Bene Gesserit is a Mentat, and she has to hide it because otherwise Leto would kill her.
So everybody comes up to him and they bargain for spice because he's the only source of spice, and he tells everybody they're super wrong. And we learn about the progress of all the factions. For example, the Ixians, they've made something called the No Room, and they can kind of shield what Leto can see because he's super prescient. He can just see the future, but this can somehow shield
it, so
he cannot
like
see
only
there,
one
inside.
Place on Ix, and like it's a very small place. Throughout the book at the beginning they talked about this Malky, who used to be his previous counselor, and it's said that he was like Leto's only friend. He was a very evil man, but he was like Leto's only friend.
I wish Malky was there more. I love Malky, but he's not there at all.
Yeah, I'm sure there is like a good explanation as to why he was such a good friend to Leto, but I couldn't really get it.
Yeah, I would love a book, a spin-off, only Leto and Malky going on adventures.
Just Malky. Leto and Malky going on an adventure.
That's the spin-off I want. Yeah. A whole TV show. It's like 7 seasons of this.
Yeah, they're building this Trelaxual, trying to build, to make artificial spice. Again, like if he's forcing the Trelaxual to do this, he's forcing the Ixians to build something like a shield against pre-science.
Yeah, he kind of wants all that. Yeah. And then, so he's kind of like checking on progress of his plans, which is funny. And they're trying to hide it, and they think that he's gonna be mad about it. It's like a whole thing.
He's like a parent, and like those are the children doing something, like thinking like, haha, my mother would never expect, and he's like, yeah, good, he's doing that. Good job.
It's also, there's the Space Guild, they're building spaceships that could travel without...
No, those are also the Ixians, like they're building computers again.
I think together, like Space Guild.
And like, he also, he has a computer, like Leto has a computer, and he's like, I guess this is kind of like a secret. Yeah, I have a computer. I asked them to build a computer, like, I know this has been banished. I think that's a stupid thing. I don't care. I'm just going to use a computer.
So he can remotely control his card and stuff
No, and also he can communicate with Nyla, like, because that's the other thing. Like, he takes like this super hunky woman, and who is super faithful to him, and it's like, yeah, just go to Siona, who hates me and wants to kill me, and do whatever she tells you to do. Just obey her in every order.
Yeah.
And she's like, but are you sure? Like, she wants to kill you. Yeah, just do it. Just trust me. Just do it. And she's like, what is happening? Am I supposed to do this?
Nayla is the most faithful fish speaker.
Like, that's so amazing. Like,
I love the Nayla character. I love the beginning, what really got me at the start of the book. There's a moment where this happens, what you just described. Yeah. And then she goes to discuss the rebel plans with Sayona. And Nayla is kind of confronted by Sayona. And Sayona is like suspicious that Nayla is in cahoots with Leto, or she's spying on her. And she says something like, you have to answer me. You have to answer me. I'm not sure what the question was exactly. And Nayla says something like, I will always believe and do exactly what God says and believes, or something like that.
Yeah.
And Sayona's like, oh, okay, it's fine. She's just religious.
She's just religious.
So that point was like, and Nayla has almost like a religious experience. She's like, my God told me that if I say the truth, it will be okay. And I told her that I am working for God, and she's okay with it. Oh my God, it's all working according to God's plan. God.
And then
that was genius.
The Ixen sent we was like this kind of like generic, like eventually you find out that she's actually a clone of Maki. Anyway, she's like, supposedly she's Maki's niece who has been genetically engineered to seduce Leto.
So that's what we didn't say. When they stole the journals, they found in them that Leto loved Ganima.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's vulnerable. He knows love.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, that's a good angle to get at Leto, but did you need to read that he had a sister for that? Like, how did this help you exactly? Are you dumb? What is this? I don't get it.
I mean, Sayona is kind of dumb throughout the book. She does a lot of stupid shit.
I get the plot point that love will get him and that's his weakness, but I don't understand how they got to it and why they did nothing about it. Like, the whole point of the start of the book is Sayona and her gang, who is already dead, basically. They are already dead because of the wolves.
The wolves.
And their angle is to get at Leto by using love, but they never use it in any way. And meanwhile, the Ixians send Hui to do that, and they kind of succeed. But okay, yeah, it's weird.
And like, Leto, of course, he knows that this is a trap, and he's like, I know it's a trap, but you know, for all the male audience that is listening to us, you know that, like, that doesn't matter. To this podcast's male audience, like, you know that sometimes you know something's wrong, you know something is just doomed to fail, but it's just do it anyway.
There are so many quotes. I loved so much from this book, and it shows that on Goodreads there's always the quote section, and this one has like 300-400 quotes, and everybody, every teacher has so many likes. And one of the quotes about love was, you know it's love when you're willing to give joy and doom the consequences, or something like that. I think he says, if you're willing to give joy to somebody and doom the consequences, then you know that's love. So I think that's very true. And all kinds of quotes like that. I remember I had a note to mention this because it was so ridiculous. And I found out it wasn't in this book, but it was in the third book. And it was during Leto's spice fever dreams in Jakurutu when they trapped him. And he said, I quote, or not he said, but the book said, there was an adult beef swelling in his loins, and he felt his mouth open, clinging to the girder shape of ecstasy.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? This had to have been from the fourth book, not the third book. So, okay, so that's the only sexual experience he's ever had. It's a beef swelling while he was high on spice, and then he became a worm. So, no surprise, he's like very, very much in for the trap of Hui, who is a lovely lady.
I mean, he had wives throughout his life, that they said that, but they were just like ceremonial wives, I guess.
There's no action in Leto's life. So he's super excited that they made a girl that's perfect for him, and they have these sweet conversations, and they're like the perfect lovers. And he knows it's bad, and he knows she's there to bring his doom. But
of course, the second she meets Duncan, she can't resist. That's like the we're skipping a little bit ahead, but so Duncan and we meet, and they're like, you know, this is like the dumbest thing we can do, but we just can't stop ourselves. It's just, and Monio is like, please don't do it, please just, like, anything else is fine, you can have anyone you want, Duncan, like anyone, there's like literally an army of women who only wants you, but just don't do this.
So first I read it, I was sure this is nonsense, and there was no justification or motivation for this. And then I think it kind of makes sense because Duncan is an idiot. He has just sex with everybody, and this is the only person he cannot have or shouldn't have sex with because it's forbidden. So that's already more attractive.
And it's also a way to defy Lido.
Yes, exactly. And also, Vi is very, very young. Is she like 20 or something?
Yeah, she's pretty young.
She was very young. And she also has never had a partner before. And this was after she has agreed to be married to Leto and never be with any other man. So surely she would want to see some action in her life before she is betrothed to Leto. This is like the party before the wedding. She has to have her fun. Because she initiated it. I looked it up. And she wanted it.
Yeah, of course.
Not him.
I mean, you can't resist the Duncan.
And Duncan was like, of course.
Can't say no. As we get later to the best scene in all of Dune.
Yes.
But before that, okay, so there is the whole central part of the book when Leto is in the city and lots of stuff happen. None of that particularly interesting. Other than at one point there's like another terrorist attack on Leto and they put fear risk. And so he gets really mad.
And this was the horror part. Like, this was horrifying to me, like, the description.
He starts, like, crashing people and killing them.
So first he rides in with a cart and rams people in the cart. And he gets off the cart, crashes people in his body.
And people from the city see him. And he's like, wow, they've seen the monster that I am. I'm like, well, that's not hard. Like, you look like a worm. They didn't need you to see, like, killing all of these people to understand you're a monster.
But there's a whole point throughout the book where Monio is talking to Leto and he's talking about the worm, the worm awakens.
It says that Leto has kind of like this double, like he has the worm personality who's evil and monstrous.
And it was scary to me. So when Leto is like bored and drifts off, or when he gets very emotional, the worm body kind of has its mind of its own and it takes over and becomes aggressive. And sometimes it like lashes out on Monio when they get angry in their discussion and Monio runs screaming out of the room and Leto is like flailing around. So in this scene, the worm completely takes over and he just becomes a complete insane monster, like a murderous beast. And there was a detail I will never forget, that he was crushing people left and right. And because worms on Dune, they are not very happy with liquid. And when you put them in water, they die and stuff like that. So there was so much blood that it was hurting him. And there was like steam coming out of his body because the blood was getting in his skin because of the moisture. And that made him even more aggravated. And he was like a bloodlust beast in a fury, fueled by the blood of the people all over the floor. He's like rolling in it. It was horrifying. If this is ever a movie, I dare them to film this scene after Duncan had sex with V or something.
they have sex after this. This was still in the Worthy City. After this, they go back to the insane tower and he brings Siona with him and he's like, okay. And Monio keeps telling her like, yeah, you had your like teenager moment. Like Evie Atreides has a teenager moment and we try to kill Leto and we fail horribly and all of our friends are killed and we just give up and become his servants. And Siona is like, no, fuck, screw that. I'm not going to be that. I'm still like a angsty teenager. And Leto takes her to the desert with a steel suit.
So not a test.
And Siona is so dumb that keeps forgetting to cover her mouth. So she she risks dying.
Yeah, so the test is she has to survive like how long in the desert?
Like, I forgot how many days, but she's sleeping like in Leto's body.
Yes.
And then like it starts raining and she notices that like the rain is actually hurting Leto. And she's like, haha, now I know how to kill him.
So we didn't mention that the ultimate plan is to breed Siona with Duncan and create a person that is immune to prescience is Leto's ultimate goal.
Yeah, because that was like his goal all along. And during his walk in the desert with Siona, he confirms that he can't see Siona in his vision.
So his ultimate goal is to have a lot of descendants of Siona and then that way humanity will finally be able to be free from the tyrant and nobody will be able to control them with their prescience. That's like the ending point of the golden path. So the point in the desert is to test if Siona is actually the Siona that should be bred and she cannot put in the mouthpiece and she kept losing the moisture. And to save her life, she sleeps on Leto. And not only that, you missed out the part that's the most disturbing.
She drinks out of Leto's nipples.
Something like that. I think it was on his face. So she has no water. And Leto is like, oh, you might die here. If you weren't so dumb, you would have saved moisture and you wouldn't die in the desert. But there is a way to save you. You know what it is. You have to lick my face or some shit. I don't know what part of the body.
Which part it was. But...
And he was so sexual about this. It was so weird. He was like, yeah, so if you stroke this part of my body like really hard, it's gonna like excrete some like liquid, and that's the only water you can get here. So you have to suck on that really hard, and then after you've sucked on that really hard, you're gonna get super high because it's full of spice. And you know, you can just like lie on my belly here. I'm gonna like shape into a cradle. So while you like jerk me off and suck me off, and then you will just lie on my belly and have the worst fever dream of your life. And let's do that now, please. And Siona was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. That's
that was insane. Yeah.
Just incredible.
And she saw the golden path, and she saw that what Leto is planning is justified, and she goes along with it now, but she's still very...
She still hates him. Like, that's like one of the... I don't like Siona as a character at all, but this is still cool. You know, at the beginning of the book, she hates him so much because he killed all of his friends. She doesn't get past that. She's still like, fuck you. I know you've been doing this like for humanity, and like you're the one. Like, and there are like some kind of like nice moments between the two of them together, and I was kind of afraid, okay, she'll come to understand him and she'll kind of accept him. No, she understands him a little, and she sees him in a different way, but at the same time she's like, yeah, no, fuck you, I'm gonna kill you, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Yeah. You're still going to die.
And I think this was very clever, because you kind of feel the whole book that the end of this book is Leto dying, and I think she saw him dying very clearly. And I think I would almost like guess to say, in the Golden Path vision she had in her like spice dream fever, she was kind of told how he dies and how he achieve it.
No, I think so too.
And that's why she goes along with it, because she's like, this is all insane and I hate you, but the point is our shared goal. So you want me to kill you? Yes, please.
Yeah.
Let's go. And that's why she agrees. And at this point, it was super tense to me reading it, because I was sure everybody already knows what's going to happen. Siona and Leto already knows how they're going to kill each other. And you don't. And you're like waiting for every second. Now it's going to explode. I don't know. It was very tense. And all this tenseness and sexual tension builds up so hard that... That is the best scene in literature, you agree?
Yeah, well, first, okay, so what happens is that after Duncan sleeps with Hui, because of course, Leto's like, okay, we're going to get married in the museum Fremen village. And let's send Siona and Duncan there to wait for us.
I think Moneo actually tries to hide them or something, and then he just wants, in spite of him trying to hide them and trying to like make them friends, he's just like, oh, by the way, let's get married right there.
Yeah. And so they send them there, and Duncan is like, when he's there, firstly he tells the Fremen, like, who the fuck are you? I have been with the Fremen. I know how the Fremen are. Let me tell you about them. And they're like, wow, this guy's so cool.
Everybody's impressed by Duncan, and Duncan loves it.
But no one is more impressed by Duncan than Nyla.
So Nyla is this muscular woman who follows every command, is very religious, very faithful, very loyal, and super tense the whole book. You can feel it. She's very nervous about Siona finding out that she's working for Leto the whole time.
Yeah.
And they have this plan, the end of the book. We talked about insane plans, so this is another insane plan. So
this is not too insane,
it's
to be
kind
fair.
Of insane.
I mean, it's insane just because like it was... Like, Leto should be able to see the future, and so that's why. But besides that, like, it's not insane. Like,
and it's funny that Leto knows exactly that this is going to happen, and it's probably his plan is the funny part. But anyway, so there's Duncan, Siona, Nyla, and that's it? Some Fremen, I guess? Museum Fremen?
No, I think, like, it's the three of them, and the goal is they have to climb up this, like, this cliff, where, like, the street is, like, the road that Leto is going to pass on with his procession.
So they have a les gun and rope. That's all they have.
Yeah, that's all they have. And they have to get on top, and then they have to shoot, because there is a bridge, and under the bridge there is the river Duncan, Idaho. And they have to shoot the bridge so that Leto will fall into the water and he will die, because like water is poison for him.
And who has to shoot the bridge?
And Nyla is the one in charge of shooting the bridge.
And she's so stressed, like you can feel the tension. Like I was like, what the fuck.
And
she's
also they're like dying. Well, but how do we get on top of there? Like, we don't have any way to get on top of the cliff. Mm-hmm. And Duncan is like, yeah, when I grew up on Jedi Prime, I used to climb stuff like that all the time. I think I can do it. And they're like, no, you're insane. Like, that's way too high.
Yeah. It's super deadly. It's like a free solo, free climb, the insane mountain.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to show you. They told me I'm an old model. Fuck them. I'm going
to
show them.
Nyla, we skipped that she wants to really have sex with Duncan. She loves Duncan like everybody else. And she wishes she could have sex with Duncan and bear his children, because that's what the fish speakers should do. And she keeps watching him and watching him.
And then he's so hunky when he's climbing the mountain. And finally, he reaches the top and Nyla just has a climax. Just like she's
but
like,
no, you're wrong. Excuse me. She keeps watching, and she's keep building up the sexual tension. She keeps imagining how they would fuck so hard, and then he reaches the top, and she's like, "Thank God he survived, because she was very stressed that he would fall and die." And she's like on the edge, and then Duncan drops the rope, and only after the rope has touched the ground, she comes so hard, and then that's it.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, Duncan, that's why I said, like, how can Alia in book 3 not be satisfied with Duncan? Like, like, he's a man who can make, like, women orgasm just by climbing a mountain. Dropping
this
a rope.
This gave me like such a strange feeling. The whole experience of reading this book was so strange to me. This is why I really feel like this is like a genre. I don't know what this is, because it was so gruesome, some of the fights, and it was so thoughtful, like thought-provoking, some of the ideas, and some of it was so absurdly funny.
Yeah.
And then at the top of all this, like, excuse the pun, climax of the book, I was feeling so stressed. I was like, when is Lita gonna die? What's Nyla gonna do?
Yeah.
What's this happening? And then she like comes after a rope touches the ground, and I was like, yeah. What did I just read?
Yeah. And then there is the other scene, which I think many people refer to like as maybe the best scene in all of the book, which I don't necessarily agree, but I think it's a very powerful scene. That is, so Leto has sent V to prepare for the wedding ceremony to this town, and then he goes to with this procession, and they have to meet a few days before the actual wedding ceremony and then go to the village together. And when they meet again, Leto kind of knows he's going to die, and V also realizes that, and have like this kind of like heart-to-heart dialogue.
Yeah, that was very touching.
Yeah, I forgot the exact quote. Let's see if I can find it.
Before you find it, the idea is that Leto is so disconnected from humanity that he basically is, V kind of breaks his heart, not breaks his heart, but finally is able to have some intimate contact with him, and he cries. Even though he cannot cry, like his warm body
is
not.
Yeah, he cries able. And then he hurts himself by crying.
Yes, which is awful and very unexpectedly weird and at the same time meaningful and sad and sweet at the same time. And then she touches his flipper hand and he says, "I haven't been touched for 4,000 years. Ever since I became a worm, nobody touched me." And she says, "Oh, I'm so sorry I touched you. We agreed that we would be a couple in the spirit and not in the flesh." And he's, maybe that's when he cries, I'm not sure, something like that. It was very, very touching.
Yeah, because you feel like this is the only time where you feel kind of bad for Leto, because again you realize like, yeah, he knows what's about to happen, and the reason why he cries is that he finally realized that, like, it's not that he's going to die, like that he has been preparing this forever and he has kind of accepted like his destiny since like 3,000 years before, but he finally realizes that his sacrifice means that she will also die, which is like what, like, yeah, brings him to tear up. Yeah,
and she is okay with it, is what she says. Yeah. And she's completely supportive, and she says, "Yes, I am with you until the end, and I know, and it's okay, I'm here." And it's like a very heartfelt moment.
We also skip the part where he calls Maggie back to the
yeah, that's actually what I meant to ask you about.
Yeah.
So before I go to the very end, before the wedding, Malky is the maker, or like an Ixion engineer. And they have this snow room, and inside of it they made V, and they engineered her to be the perfect, like, thing for Leto. And then we know that they're friends, so I don't know why, like, maybe Leto is just mad, so he gets him arrested and he brings him over, is that right?
Yeah, because they have dared building the room where he can see.
So Malky is brought over, and he's on a bed or something, and he's super beat up, almost dead, or something. I guess the guards beat him up or something.
I think he was... I forgot if he was sick or...
And immediately, Malky is hilarious because he cannot stand or something, because he's so hurt. And the first thing he says, I was like, I was like laughing. He said something like, "Oh, I failed to rise to the occasion of meeting you," or something. And I was like, "What do you mean?" So immediately, I like, their conversation is just insane. Yeah. And I would love to have that conversation to be 5 chapters instead of 1 paragraph. Yeah. I don't even know what they talked about.
Yeah, they were kind of like, Leto is kind of like, "Well, you know, you built this thing. You got me. You old you. Now out of the tower."
by your dad. But also he find out that Hui is the inverse of him.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's like his clone, but reversing all of his personality. That's like the part that I could never really understand well, because it's kind of like Malky is supposed to be his friend, but they also kind of say that Malky is kind of the devil. Like, he's super evil.
Yeah, he should be like the super arch enemy of Leto.
Right. I think like the way you wanted to frame it, it's kind of like, you know, if you want to see it like in a biblical way, it's like, is the devil, and so his opposite is kind of like an angel, like something like that. But I don't know, it's a little bit confusing.
Yeah, now you reminded me, I wanted to quickly mention Leto has memories that go back so far that he remembers how Adam and Eve stole the apple in Eden, and he knows that it wasn't Eve who took the apple, but it was Adam, and he blamed it on Eve. And that's why men are bad. And I was like, damn,
yeah.
What are you talking about? Okay, anyway, that was just for the fish speaker discussion. So let's go to the end. Malky is dead. I'm so sad. I love Malky. And the plan is they shoot the bridge. So the card, the throne card with Hui and Moneo and Leto is on the bridge. And Nyla is about to shoot the bridge. And she has this another religious crisis. At this point, I was sure she's going to come again. I was like, what the fuck? Because
why?
Because, like, it was so jarring to me, this ending of this book. I was so out of it. I even had to ask you at the time I finished it. I was waiting when you finished reading it, and then I had to ask you what happened, because I was like, what the fuck ever? I was so out of it. Like, what it actually meant, like, not what happened.
Yeah, she shoots at the bridge, and she knows that it's kind of like a test of fate. Like, she believes in Leto so much that she thinks that even she's just being tested, and she'll do this thing. Leto will somehow survive, and she will have passed this test of faith.
Because God himself told her to do it, so it must be what should be done.
And then it's kind of like Leto trying to assert his mortality to his strongest follower. Mm. Being like, oh, you believed in me, I was a false god the whole time. You believed in me, you did what I told you to do, even though it was insane and was against everything you wanted to do. And then it showed you that I was just a mortal at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you proved this, like, you destroyed your faith with your own hands. You proved this with your own hands. So yeah, poor Nyla.
Yeah, I meant to say, all these events are so jarringly different, like the climbing and the shooting and the conversation with V. It was so jarring to me, like, what is happening when I was reading it. So then she shoots the bridge, everybody falls down, everybody dies. So Moneo dies first.
Poor Moneo, like, I was so sad that he dies. Like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised.
No, I wasn't either, but, like, come on.
I was just thinking about his life. I was thinking about what happened to him before he died, like the last thing outside of arguing with Leto and the wedding. And it was that Leto told him that if Sayona cannot breed with Duncan, he would love him to breed with Sayona.
Yeah. No, wasn't it like he said to breed with Hui?
Oh, sorry, with Hui. Yes, sorry. With Hui, not Sayona.
Yeah, he said, like, I was thinking, like, Leto said something like, I'm not mad because someone slept with Hui. It's that I didn't want Duncan to sleep with her. I wanted you to sleep with her.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was Moneo's insane kind too. Of like, what the fuck?
I am 118 years old, God, sir. What? And then after this conversation, the worm takes over and starts screaming and runs away or something. It was insane. So Moneo, before he hits the river and dies, he says something and he sees Leto falling out of the cart, and he finally seems like has a realization that things will kind of be okay. I think he kind of has a peaceful, like, last thought, that he thought Leto was an insane tyrant and everything was going to hell, but because he can see that Leto will now die and that will free humanity, he kind of dies in peace. Yeah.
Okay. I guess killed by his daughter who hated him. And
I think there was some, I don't know what he said, but he said something that kind of meant, I believe in what you're doing now, Leto.
Thank you.
So then Leto falls and Hui falls. Hui falls first,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, like Leto sees her dying. And there's also that thing because Duncan kills Nyla, which is like Duncan in this book is so shocking.
He's
so crazy because it's like, you were not supposed to kill her. I'm like, well, Duncan, you're an idiot. What the fuck were you thinking?
So before we get to that, Leto falls in the water and all the sand trout that is like constructing his body get off his body because they're in the water, and he becomes this like gory, disastrous amalgamation of flesh that's just crawling on the bank of the river. And he breaks off some fingers and he's like, oh, whatever, fingers, it hurts like hell.
I can finally feel some pain. How interesting. It's so bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like Siona and Duncan go there and they're like, oh, yeah, here you are.
And then Duncan kills Nyla.
Yeah.
And he kills her in the most gruesome way. He cuts her in half with the lace gun. It was so gory.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was, I couldn't believe it. Which makes sense why he killed her, but I didn't expect that much gore.
Like, poor Nyla, like, she failed. She was ordered to do something. She did it very well. And then she's like, oh, wow, you actually killed your god. And she realized that. And then a second later, she gets cut in half for doing what Duncan told her to do because Duncan's plan was stupid.
In the most twisted and morbid and horrible way, I feel like this was also Leto's plan.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was.
Not have like Nyla suffer because he loved Nyla.
I mean, I'm not sure about that. I think he didn't care about Nyla that much.
I think after the scene where he was following her on the stairs in his mind and loved how she's climbing the stairs so bravely, I think he loved Nyla and she followed all his commands to the point that if she died, it would have been easier for her than live without her god,
yeah.
I feel like. But anyway, Leto has some last words I wrote down. So the last words of the god, Leto. Do not fear the Ixians. They can make the machines, but they can no longer make Arafel. I know. I was there. So I assume that Arafel is what you talked about in the previous discussion we had about the Golden Path. That's something that could destroy humanity.
Yes, never really explained.
I thought it would be in the next book.
No.
It's not explained. Because you said that the Golden Path isn't only people destroying themselves, but also something evil and dark.
It's never it's not about people destroying themselves. It was never about that.
So I thought it's about Arafel. So no.
It's not clear. Because there's no seventh book, so it's not clear.
Okay, well, I just wanted to check that. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, Leto finally dies. And what does Siona and Duncan do?
Of course, they're like, well, you know, we resisted this the whole book. You know what? It's time to make some babies. Siona, you know, your genes are very important. We need to spread them around. And then, like, I forgot if they say this in this book or in the next book, but it's not really a big spoiler for the next book. Like, they said that Siona, I think, has 7 daughters. And Duncan has, like, 1,000. What the hell?
I think that's in the next book, but I already got there. And they also say that there is the scattering.
Yeah.
So the scattering means 2 things. First off, the people of the world are now free to travel without spies, kind of, in the future, and they can finally be free without the tyrant, and they can leave the galaxy, and they cannot be followed, they cannot be presciently controlled, so they can do whatever, so that's wonderful. So now humanity is trained to be stronger and free and better, and they can do whatever they want in the future, so every possibility is open.
Yep.
And also, Leto's body scattered into pieces, and now there is a new evolved version of the worm that has a part of his brain or something.
So, because all the worms had died with the transformation of Arrakis, it was the last worm left. Now all the sand trouts fell into the water and they will become worms eventually. But it's said that Leto believed that a pearl of his conscience will still be into each worm. In later books, people think that it's like his ultimate punishment because he will forever be aware, but kind of like trapped in the body of all of these worms.
Yeah. He cannot die because he's still there.
So
that's, yeah. So that's the end. We made it.
Yeah. Well, like the epilogue is, we forgot to mention, like the epilogue is like 1,000 years later, they find, like archaeologists find the
journals.
Yeah, like the Noentropy Chamber, I think it is, like where his journals were kept. And they kind of review the history, like how history views Leto, because Leto was perceived as a tyrant by everyone who came after. And it kind of shows that he was acting for the greater good more than people giving credit for.
Yeah. He even says it many times in his dialogues, monologues, that he will be misunderstood, but then people will find the wisdom and then
some
will understand. And it will all be for the greater good. And he knows what he's doing. He can do no wrong, of course. Yeah. So this book, for me, was the perfect ending to the 4 books of Dune. And that's why I was putting off the next one. But I already started, so if you are not exhausted and if you still have time for me, Pablo, next episode, yeah. Heretics of Dune.
100%. I want to discuss about the ending of that book. I wonder if you'll feel as satisfied as this one.
I'm very curious.
But you'll see. And thank you so much for everybody who stayed with us until the end of the fourth book. And let us know in the comments how you like this book. Do you hate it? Do you love it?
Do you prefer this or do you prefer JoJo Part 7?
Okay. So, yeah. Anything else to say before we finish?
Little likes Bach. Johann Sebastian Bach is the best composer that has ever lived.
Yeah, at one point they try to console him when he's upset, and I think Moneo tells him, oh, don't you just want to go back into your memories and like relive one of the concerts of Bach? And he's like, oh, I don't know, I'm just going to watch some orgies and just porn. This book is one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced entertainment-wise, while it still all made sense. Everything that happened in this book, I don't think there was something that happened for the plot that didn't make sense.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I think most things are very symbolic, and you can really understand a lot about the characters and a lot about the meaning of like what this is showing. I do think that the whole central part of the book, it's too much of Frank Herbert just telling you stuff.
Yes. I think this is a good way to end it. One of our most popular videos recently on YouTube is How to be Muad'Dib Top Self-Help Book. And Pablo said, How to be Muad'Dib Top Self-Help Book 2. So guess what Top Self-Help Book number 1 is? That's gonna be the next video.
No, I think the real self-help book is How to Get All the Women by Duncan Idaho.
Ah, that's it, okay.
And the cover, it's him climbing a rock.
That's the clickbait right there on YouTube, I see.